Welcome to Unleashed at Work and Home, the show dedicated to helping veterinarians, vet techs, dog trainers, shelter and rescue workers, pet sitters, and all the other animal crazy pet professionals manage their stress and find more joy. I'm your host, Colleen Pilar, and I'm thrilled you're here with us today. Make sure you hit the subscribe button on your favorite app so that you won't miss a single episode. This episode is brought to you by our free community, the Circle of Resilient and Thriving Pet Professionals. If you like the ideas shared here, then you're invited to continue the conversation with other lifelong learners in the community. You can find out more at ColleenPilar.com. It's the perfect place for you to learn cool stuff, feel good, and take action to create the life you love. Come join us. Welcome back to Unleashed at Work and Home. My guest today is Kim Iffert, a dog trainer who owns a company called Dogwise to help people understand why their dogs do what they do. And I'm so happy to have you here today, Kim.
Pleasure to be here. So I've always had much respect for what you do and have been following you for quite some time. So I'm honored to be here today.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. I think our paths cross through the Family Paws organization, and that's such important work. I know that you do a lot with families and helping them understand their dogs a little bit better. I always like to start with the question of, like, did you always want to be a dog trainer, or how did you get from childhood to here? Because I think it's so interesting how each of us has had a different journey. So tell me, wind me back in time to, you know, like, I don't know, 10 years old always seems like a time people start asking kids all the time, what do you want to be? So I'm curious, when you were 10, what did you envision?
Oh my gosh, when I was 10, I think I was still wandering around streets singing out loud, thinking that somebody was going to magically hear me and I'd be some famous singer. But I think by the time I was 12, I realized I had no singing voice or musical ability. I have reinvented myself so many times. I have a degree in business and retail management. I used to want to be, when I went to college, my goal was to be a buyer for a chain of department stores or to own my own store. So that's where the bulk of my formal education came in. I ended up working, just kind of being a creative mindset. When I had my kids, I stayed home and did like painted murals for people and did commission paintings and tried to create a little stationery, like a paper stationery business. That was, gosh, what was that called? The Artful Attic. So, because I had a little office in my attic space and I would do, you know, just cute, kitschy little things. From there, I started working in interior design because the mural painting and, you know, I would help people with other things and had been working as with an interior design firm in Chicago when we adopted a dog. I had always had dogs, had always loved dogs. As a child, you go back to that 10 years old. As a child, you know, we moved around a lot. My dad was military. So the dog was the one consistent thing in my life. You know, that every move, I always had that one friend that was always still there. And gosh, I could tell that dog, her name is Samantha. I could tell her anything, you know, any secret, and she wouldn't tell anybody. And so always had a love for dogs. And we adopted this dog, Diamond, from a rural shelter in Indiana. And Diamond was this beautiful purebred Rottweiler. We had no history on her. And Diamond ended up having a lot of issues, so both physical and behavioral. And we were kind of working through some of those things. I was working with a behaviorist up in Chicago and a private trainer coming to my house and working with my vet. And this was in early 2000s and still trying to, you know, have three kids at home and their friends coming over with this potentially dangerous dog. And, you know, it just was kind of a crazy, crazy life. And I remember we had to make a very tough decision with her, you know, one that is still controversial to this day, but we made the decision to euthanize her for her behavior issues, just to, you know, keep my kids safe and their friends safe and our community safe. And I love that dog. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do.
It always is.
Yeah. And at that time, I was working with an interior design client whose, you know, biggest concern that was coming to me was that, you know, the yellow stripe in the chair wasn't the same color as the yellow on her walls. And I just thought, you know what, you know, if that's your biggest concern in life, you're one of the most fortunate people I know. And, you know, hindsight, I'm sure that wasn't the biggest concern. It was manifesting from something else. But I had just saved a dog to turn around and kill it, you know, in my brain. And so I quit my job and I decided I was going to try to make sure nobody had to do what I just had to do. So I decided to start studying dog behavior, and I found, you know, ABC Animal Behavior College, and started there with just basic, and it just kind of, you know, jumped off from there. And, you know, after a little while, I started working with shelters and rescues just to get some hands-on experience and, you know, realize that there's so many ways that you can help in the animal welfare industry. And so here I am almost 20 years later. And, you know, have found so many amazing organizations, and every day I learn something new, whether it's from, you know, a class that I'm taking or a group that I'm working with. And Family Paws is just so amazing. You know, the Legs program too, you know, every day I learn so much more, and there's such supportive communities and, you know, but from the dogs that I work with and the, you know, the people that own these dogs, like, it just, you know, every day is a new experience. And, you know, gosh, how can it get better than that? So, and at the same time, I feel like I'm helping people, I'm helping families, I'm helping animals, and, you know, giving a voice to some of the voiceless, and here I am.
Yeah.
Big story.
it's awesome. And I always promise that podcast episodes are not coaching sessions, and I have totally a question that falls in the coaching category. So I'm going to ask it. We'll see if it's fair game. With that trauma of making that hard decision and then deciding, I want to learn more to help, what gave you the courage to go from what had to have felt just like such a difficult, hard, unsuccessful transition to, but I have within me the gifts that if I learn these things, I can help others and prevent them from being in this spot? Because I think I probably would have just run. I would have been like, wow, too much, too hard, too scary, I'm out. And instead, you were like, wow, I'm all in.
That might have been just plain stupidity.
It's incredibly empowering, it is.
Right? Just ignorance, absolute ignorance. No, you know, it was such an emotional decision. And we tried so many things to not have to be there. And it was empowering to me to realize that, you know, if I could have done something differently, what would I have done? Mm-hmm. And seeing so many people, you know, in struggling situations, and seeing so many animals, you know, like I think it was more about Diamond, you know, it was more about that dog. And I'm going to get choked up talking about it, but, and that connection, I think I felt like I owed it to her.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. And also so glad, like, thank you for sharing that. And I totally cheated by asking that question, but that's the kind of stuff that matters too, of like, what is it that drives us? And it is relationship and connection and the power of it all. I've heard so many people talk about that difficult decision as if it were made cavalierly. And I have never in my whole life encountered a single person who made that decision cavalierly. They may exist. And if they do, I would say they exist because they have built up such walls around their heart because of other trauma that they could make that decision cavalierly.
Right.
But in my life, I've talked to so many people who've made that decision, and it's always difficult. It always requires soul searching. And it's usually coming from the sincere, this is the kindest thing to do in this moment.
Right.
And that's a hard, hard spot. Okay. So I totally cheated and went into a coaching session kind of topic area in a podcast. That was not okay. And yet, Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, and I think to kind of get back to that question, like, you know, I do have a lot of childhood trauma, and I think I have been so fortunate that I have been able to make good decisions and find great people to bring me through that. Whether it was as a child or as an adult, I mean, I will say my husband is the most amazing, patient, incredible man. I was so fortunate to find him, and we've been together since high school, which I think is a rarity that you find someone you can grow old with. I mean, we're coming up on, we've been together for over 40 years, you know, someone that you can grow old with and still feel that support. And I think that that's been able to kind of let me look back at some of, you know, where I came from and what those things were. And it does make me kind of dig into it. You know, like my, you know, other family relationships did not have great family relationships growing up. And now I dig into it and I'm like, oh, now I understand. It wasn't always me. It was them, you know, and their experiences. And then, you know, coming into the dog world, you know, it's not always the people. Sometimes it's the dogs, you know, and it's so hard when we live in a culture of, save them all. You know, gosh, what a great concept, you know, what a great idea in a perfect world. And couldn't we feel that way about humans too? You know, save them all. What a great idea in a perfect world. And, you know, working in this industry every day, and especially, you know, at this point in time, or for the last several years, you know, I've been working real heavily in shelters and rescues. So the people aren't necessarily involved, or at least the owners aren't necessarily involved. But when the dogs do find that place, and cats, I work with cats too. But when they do find that place, it is, to me, so important to help the person understand, you know, understand where this animal's coming from so you can move forward better. And that's, I think that's where all this comes from is, you know, if I had known more about her, I could have moved forward in a different place. You know, if I had known, and, you know, again, kind of coming to, you know, dog wise, like, you know, why does your dog do, like, why was she that way? And understanding, you know, it took me a long time to figure out that, you know, she was living in a horrible place, you know, so 20 years later, you know, more than 20 years after having to make that terrible decision, you know, I can talk to other clients and help other people kind of look at that and say, you know, what is their quality of life? You know, my quality of life is one thing, you know, you as the family and the guardian of this pet, your quality of life is important, but their quality of life is also important. And we need to look at all those different factors.
Absolutely. It is big stuff. And it's a tricky thing because we talk about it all the time that it's not just simply environment and behavior. I mean, those play huge roles, but that you are looking at an entire family system here and trying to figure out what is the best thing for everyone here. And also, what are the simple tweaks that you can do that make things better? Because the best behavior plan in the world is unworkable for most people, you know, like here's everything we could do. And people go, ugh.
Right. And that's one of the greatest things. Like I learn continually so much from Family Paws and just remembering, you know, what it was like to be a mom of three kids running a household with a job and a dog that nobody could come in the house, you know, like, you know, how do you manage that when your kids are, you know, we were so fortunate. My kids walked to school every day. You know, we lived in a community where we were, you know, it was like a little Pleasantville neighborhood, and you know, they walk to school and they walk home, and sometimes they would bring a friend home. And I always had to have this, like, the dog has to be put away and she has to be in the crate, in the room with the door locked. And, you know, it just in case someone happens to walk in with my kids. And, and it's so interesting, like looking at, you know, Family Paws was probably the first organization I got into that was like, you have to look at how other people live their lives, you know, and all of the, you know, the hundreds of different dynamics that come into, you know, a single day. And that's been, you know, I also worked when I first moved to Nashville, I worked with an organization that worked with underserved and, you know, families dealing with trauma or young adults dealing with trauma, and understanding like your last 20 years has led you to this experience today. You know, that you might not know how to mop this floor, you know, the way that I'm asking you to do it because you had 20 years of not learning, you know. it's so interesting that you have to meet each person and every animal, you know, where they are in this moment and figure out how to go from there. So
And what's your best tip for helping people do that, to actually just meet everyone right where they are in this moment?
Oh my gosh. That's kind of a tough one because it's different for every person. But I think, you know, I think always kind of trying to live outside of yourself, you know, like there's that saying that you never know what somebody else is dealing with. And I think that that is so important to keep in the front of my mind. Like, I know I'm dealing, you know, with, you know, all these different factors going on every day, every moment, but making sure that I have that understanding that, you know, everybody else is too. And I think we're living in a tough world right now where everybody is feeling so defensive, you know, and what they're feeling defensive about is, you know, everyone is different, but we have to come to a point where we can also be compassionate and empathetic about the fact that everybody's living a different life. You know, everybody has different reasons and different thought processes and different experiences. And, you know, it's just my biggest tip is just try to make sure that you're being understanding and thinking outside of yourself. But also, you know, one of my biggest challenges is setting boundaries. So I think those two things don't always go together, but I'm trying to make it work.
We're always living, learning, growing. So much to do. I'm curious if we leave you in your original timeline, working in interior design, and then project you out 20 years. So here you are 20 years later, having done all of that for all that time. And then compare that, Kim, to you now. What's something that you know, what's something true or real for you that you think you might have missed had you stayed on the other path? Not that the other path wouldn't have had its own rewards, but, you know.
Yeah. I think I have a much better connection. Like, one of the things that I really appreciate is I have a much better connection to, you know, to people rather than things. You know, the world of interiors was super fun. You know, I mean, I loved it because basically I got to find beautiful things and make places beautiful and do it on somebody else's dime, which was a key factor. But I think now I get a better connection. Like, I have met so many amazing, caring, compassionate people, and I think I would have missed out on a lot of that. You know, just a lot of soul searching, you know, why do I do what I do? You know, and the thing that I love and that I would have missed is really getting to help people and animals, you know, give a voice to the voiceless, you know, and make people's lives rather than prettier, make people's lives hopefully easier, you know, and give them the ability to see beyond themselves and care for another species. And you know, there's a lot to unpack there.
I like making people's lives not prettier, but easier. Like, there's something really important there that
often we, and again, kind of getting into counseling session, I think often we, and I use this analogy a lot when I'm talking about dogs, like when I'm talking to my clients, I'll say, you know, we decorate things to make us feel better, you know, to make us feel comfortable. And to, you know, we choose the colors that make us feel happy or calm or passionate or, you know, depending on what your goal was. And we choose, you know, the pillows that are most comfy and the couch that, you know, that we can sink into or the one that's the prettiest. And, you know, we choose those things for different reasons to make us feel a different way. And, you know, I'll talk to people about, you know, one thing in particular that I find interesting is, you know, when somebody has a dog who's marking, I'll say, you know, marking behaviors are more like we live by, you know, visually, we want things to be pretty and to make us feel happy. Dogs very often live by scent, you know, so if they're marking, it's because they want to be comfortable. They want to, you know, if it smells like me, I must be here, you know, I must belong here. And you know, so I try and tell people it's not a dominance thing. It smells good now. And their sense of scent is different than ours. So we use candles, they use other things. But you know, so I compare the two a lot, which I think is interesting. I still kind of go back to that aesthetic. And but yeah, it's an interesting, the way that we decorate is because we feel a certain way and it's how we want happened. Yeah.
And it has such a profound impact on us, because when we decorate to feel a certain way and then we feel the way we'd like to feel, then our abilities are greater. We're calmer, smarter, more productive, whatever it is that we're looking for. We're better able to relax in our comfy living rooms, and we're more focused in our organized offices or whatever the things are for us. And we don't keep that in the forefront of our minds, but we make choices based on it all the time. And to just actually bring that out into the open and to talk to your clients about that, I think is really, really valuable. It's definitely a why of your dog doing things.
Yes.
And why are you doing things? Because so much of what we do is unexamined. You know, we choose this because we chose it, because it's the right choice. But what made it the right choice? And my college roommate visited a few weeks ago, and I adore her. We have nothing in common. So she always teases me that I think that she would describe my clothes as sad, but maybe comfy. And she's quite fashionable and looks lovely at all times. And I will choose comfort and just like ease of use over any other criteria. I may not always perfectly match, but my feet are probably comfortable in my flat, boring shoes. And, you know, my sweater works. And so we went shopping together. We had this really interesting experience in a shoe store where she kept pulling out shoes and going, these are cute, and these are cute, and these are cute. And I was like, I'm not even sure I agree they're cute, but they're definitely not comfortable.
They're cute as long as you don't have to get up and stand and walk anywhere.
And she put out one and she was like, these are as boring as I'm willing to look at for you. Try these on. And I was like, I don't think they'll work with socks. She was like, you wouldn't wear socks with these. And I'm like, I always wear socks. And she's like, you're killing me here. But our filters, like if you had sent us each into that place alone, neither one of us would have thought that much about why all these different kinds of shoes were here. But just to have these conversations, she wound up buying this crazy high platform strappy sandal shoe. And I absolutely believe she's going to wear it, you know, to Walgreens on an ordinary day, because she just put those shoes on with her outfit and she looked great and off she went. And I'd be like, I have nowhere to go in a platform strappy sandal shoe. but then when invited to a party, I'm like, I don't have any actually cute shoes, because they're all comfy. But the filters that we have as we move through the world affect everything, but we don't always see our own filters. So when you use your analogies with your clients, I'm sure that helps them to see how many of their choices they're making for their own desires, legitimately so and appropriately so, but to bring into the equation, your dog is doing the same. And what is your dog filtering for? What is the criteria that matters to your dog, and how does that help? So that's really cool that you can bring your interior design background in a way that helps people understand their dogs better. Super cool.
Yeah. It's interesting. I read a book by, I think it was Temple Grandin at one point, that really kind of helped me see, you know, how the two connect, because I don't think anybody ever thinks of interior design and dog training as having any similarities whatsoever. But when you, and this book really made me look at, you know, Temple Grandin made a comment, and I wish I could remember which book of hers it was. It's been so many years since I read it, but have so much respect for her. But she talked about how she sees like the tiniest details of things. She pays attention to the detail. Like there's all this big picture stuff that's surrounding us all the time, but seeing those tiny details, you know, and I think that that has helped me just in, you know, observations of, you know, dogs and their body language. You know, the fact that, you know, I look at, you know, a light switch, and I'll notice the light switches in somebody's home, because it's one of those minute little details that, you know, it's, I think there's some interior designers that will say it's the jewelry in your house. It's the accessories, that pull things together. I pay attention to those little details. And at the same time, when I'm working and I'm observing a dog, I'm like, look at how they're positioning their ears right now. Look at how they're lifting that paw. Look at the level of their tail, and, you know, how that changes as their situation changes. And being able to look at those tiny details and pick those out over, you know, seeing those things over seeing mm-hmm. that big picture of, well, he's barking, you know, but what is he really paying attention to? I think it's been super yeah. helpful. You know, that's where those two worlds collide, and nobody mm-hmm. would ever really feel that way or think would happen. But I've been able to kind of find those little similarities.
Yeah, it gives you an eye for knowing what's the difference that will make a difference. Like what's the little piece that we could change here that will make both sides happy, and with greater understanding. That's awesome. It's fascinating to me in all these conversations with different pet pros is that people have come from so many different backgrounds. And it's always that case of like, you'd never think this and dog training go together. And they do because our brains really are wired to use our skills in different ways. And so a person who was good at interior design or accounting or pharmacy work or like all sorts of crazy random things, restaurants, can find ways that this relates because our brains are great at that. I always ask my guests to share some words that have meaning to them. And you shared a quote that I've always loved. It's a Rumi quote. Let the beauty of what you love be what you do. Tell me a little bit about those words, when they came into your life, why they stick with you.
Oh, gosh. Well, I had a tattoo around my print. It is that quote.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I don't know for those who aren't seeing it, it's all of my dogs that I've lost are tattooed around my wrist. And it started this about the same time. I found that quote when I was kind of in that place of, you know, I had just lost Diamond and was working with this client that was kind of driving me crazy. And, you know, and again, interior design, I loved it when I did it, but it wasn't my life. Like I didn't want that to be what was consuming my life. And, you know, in trying to find a way to get through this, you know, that situation and that thing that we had just done, you know, when we had put Diamond down, I was like, how do I make my life about something that I love? And, you know, it kind of came back to, I'd always loved my dogs. And that's, you know, like I said, when I went back to school and started, you know, trying to study to become a dog trainer and, you know, work on those first certifications, I was like, if I love what I do, and I don't necessarily agree with that quote of, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. I don't necessarily, like, I love the thought behind that, but yeah, I work hard.
Oh yeah.
And it's not always pretty and it's not always happy, but I still, at the end of the day, I go back for that same punishment more and more because I really truly do love that. I can make these animals and these humans' lives better. You know, I love dogs for all their dogs and cats and horses. You know, as a kid, I used to love riding horses and, you know, there's just so much to be said for the simplicity of the relationships that you can have with animals, you know, that you're never being judged. Although I did have a dog once that I swear was judging me all the time. She made me much smarter and made me a much better dog trainer because everything I taught her, she used against me somehow. She's a border collie. crazy smart. You know, it's that, you know, if let the beauty of what you love be what you do. And if I can make those connections, like I said, it's definitely work, but at the same time, it makes me wake up every morning feeling like I can go back and keep doing this. You know, I love my clients and I might not love them in the moment, you know, but I know that, that I can have an impact. And yeah, just, it puts a smile on my face every day. Even those hard days, I can go back and remember a situation that, you know, I made something better for someone. And that just resonates with me, you know, just, my purpose is making sure that other people have a purpose, I guess. So.
Mm-hmm. My purpose is making sure that other people have a purpose.
That came out quicker than probably I should have thought about, but you know, just like understanding that, you know, everybody has, it kind of going back to, you know, everybody has their things, and if we can make it a little bit better, we can, you know, give them maybe a, you know, something to laugh about, like find some humor in it or find some love or find some, even if we find a hardship and a way out, you know, a way through that hardship, no matter how major or minor it is, you know, if we can find a way to help you take a step forward, it's still a step forward.
Right. And that's what's so important about all of that is that life always has the ups and the downs. And knowing that we are going to move through, that we're always moving forward on those. What was coming up for me while you were talking a little bit about that it's not always easy, the phrase labor of love popped into my head, you know. And I think it's a labor of love is better than if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. But I think if we take labor of love and then apply it to this Rumi quote, I think the Rumi quote adds the beauty piece. Let the beauty of what you love be what you do. So finding the beauty, even in the labor, you know, finding the beauty in, you know, the hard days or the heartbreaks and the moments where you have to remind yourself of what's important about this, that's connecting back to the beauty. And then noticing beauty, of course, ties so beautifully to interior design and that you've had an eye for actual physical beauty, but beauty comes in so many forms and that you're able to see it, you know, from a visual aesthetic, but also from the connection and relationship pieces as well. Yeah, there's a lot right there we could play with. That's so interesting. So it's tattooed on your wrist. How long between coming across this quote and it becoming a permanent piece of you? Did it just like hit you one day and you're like, wow, that is me and I need it? Or did it rattle around in your head for 10 years before it?
It rattled around in my head for a while. I was not a person for tattoos. Like I appreciate the artwork that goes into it. And I actually had it engraved on a bracelet. Mm. So a friend of mine found a bracelet and engraved that on there for me and gave it to me as a gift. And so I actually kind of felt bad when I had it tattooed on me because I stopped wearing the bracelet. Like I said, I wasn't one for tattoos. I have, as I said, I have three daughters and one of them she's very much a tattoo person. And when she was turning 18, she had all these plans for, you know, I'm like, I'm going to get this tattoo and this tattoo. And, you know, she was, you know, she is destined at some point to become a full body tattoo. And, you know, when she was 17 turning 18, I said, you know, my gift for your 18th birthday will be, let's go get a tattoo together. And again, you and I, before the podcast started, we talked about control and trying to, you know, and that skill of giving up control and not scripting everything. Mm-hmm. This was where I was still trying to control things, but finding a way to let them go. And I said, let's go get a tattoo. And I said, but when we go, I want to know, like, we need to know that, you know, this is a tattoo that in 30 years, you're still going to be okay with having this tattoo on you. You know, that, you know, and it's in a place that we've thought about. And, you know, so we sat down with the tattoo artist and I was very thankful the tattoo artist talked to my daughter and I about, you know, well, if we put it here, you know, you're 18 years old. If you have children, you put it on your, you know, on your hip or like on the top of your hip. When you have children, your skin is going to stretch and that tattoo is going to look different, you know, so think about that. And, you know, I have a friend who has a tattoo on her backside and she said, when I got it, I was this, you know, teeny tiny little thing in college. And, you know, and as life has changed my body, my tattoo has changed and, you know, went from this little tiny thing to a much bigger thing. So, you know, those are all things I was trying to get my daughter to think about those. And I was kind of trying to control her decision. And at the same time, getting my own tattoo, I was like, you know, I have to think about all these things. So that, you know, we did that together as our first tattoo. And, you know, again, it was me trying to control her life. And instead it taught me that maybe I need to give up that control and let her make her own decisions. And she did. She made a great one and she's very happy with that tattoo still. And it's been, oh gosh, how old is she? So it's been about 10 years now.
Yeah.
So, and I've had it and she's had hers and she's added several more. And
Yeah. And I bet when people talk to her about her tattoos, she says, and my mom and I went on my 18th birthday when I got my first, like,
I know.
Adding you into the story, I bet comes up a lot. So.
So it does. It does. It's kept us, it's tied us together for, you know, I mean, we're mother and daughter, but it's tied us together in multiple ways. So
that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. This has been so fun talking to you, even though I cheated and asked deeper questions than I tried to in the podcast. Well, actually, that's fun for me too, but cheating isn't fair to you, but so fun for me.
No, I'm always happy to talk about my experiences. So it's, you know, it's led me to be who I am today. And I'm super grateful for that, you know, through the up and down and thick and thin and, you know, blood, sweat and tears and all those things. Like, I'm, you know, happy to be where I am today.
Yeah. And isn't that the goal? Like, comfortable in your own skin and happy to be where you are. And like, if we could just have that gift given to everyone, it would be a whole different world.
Right. And not that, you know, every day is easy. It certainly isn't. I'm at a crux in my life right now where I've had to make some tough decisions in the last few weeks. And, you know, I keep like mull over and is this the right one? But at least I'm making them. At this point in my life, I can make them for me and, you know, my peace of mind. And I think that's a good place to be.
So. Yeah. I mean, to be consciously examining your choices and choosing what's right for you versus just reacting to what's being pushed upon. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a gift to kind of experience it that. And I think for so many women, it seems to start hitting around 40. And then from then, it's just like opens up this whole new world of like, oh, wait, I am allowed to make choices. I am allowed to. Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah.
The things we know now that we wish we knew then.
Yes. Yeah. There is a certain freedom. And, you know, each decade that comes now, there is a little bit of freedom that comes with, you know, now I can make this decision for me. And I feel like I have a voice that I probably didn't feel like I had, you know, back in my 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, as we're approaching more and more and more numbers there, higher and higher numbers. I used to think 50 was old, and now I'm like, well, gosh, I'm way past that. I'm so much closer to 60. And now 80 seems young, you know. I hope I feel that way in another, you know, 15, 20 years, but
yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's so empowering, I think, to have a little wisdom behind me. Mm-hmm. And I use the word wisdom loosely. I don't know that I'm necessarily wise. I'm wise in the W-H-Y part of it. Comes back in many ways.
It does. It all comes back. It all does. So if people wanted to learn more about you and your work, how could they do that?
Well, I have a very basic website, so I'm not much one for those aesthetics when it comes to technology, but a very basic website, and it's www.dogwise, and that's WHYS.com, and it's all about, you know, trying to figure out, you know, why our dogs do what they do, and if we need to make changes, and, you know, what are our own expectations of our animals, and all those fun things. But yeah, dogwise.com, and my information is on there. I'm always open to new people and learning new stories and trying to relate how, you know, relate mine to theirs and see how that goes.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing a part of your story with us today. I really enjoyed talking with you today. It was so fun, Kim.
You as well. So I had a feeling we'd have a good time today.
I definitely did. So fun. Thanks for listening to Unleashed at Work and Home. I invite you to come learn more at ColleenPilar.com, where you can be steady, be strong, and be long.